Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back, Cracked fans, to another edition of the Cracked Interviews podcast. I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. We have a phenomenal week of content planned for all of you listeners, as we will be live all week long from the Arizona Tennis Classic, the ATP Challenger 175K event, now in its fourth iteration of the tournament. Of course, it's our second consecutive year getting to serve as on-site media for the event. And in that capacity, of course, we have the tremendous opportunity to speak with so many different players in the main draw. A reminder to all of you listeners, Christian Garin has to play qualifying at this year's Arizona Tennis Classic. Why is that relevant? Well, it's because he's currently ranked number 87 in the world. That's right. Even with all the withdrawals, that's still the ranking cutoff just to get into this challenger event. So it is a loaded draw, of course, from top to bottom. And look, I will do my best alongside our CR intern, Owen Alderman, to try and grab every player in the main draw. We will try to offer as much coverage of this event as we can, make the most of our opportunity to be surrounded by so many different top 100 players. Again, each of those conversations we do manage to secure, you'll be able to hear them here on the Cracked Interviews podcast feed. And look, the topics are going to be pretty consistent. I'm going to ask what brings each player to Phoenix, going to ask each player for their aspirations in 2024. And then, of course, we'll tailor the rest of the interviews to whomever we are speaking to. The point more broadly is it's going to be a fantastic week of content, and I guarantee you won't want to miss out on any of it. So without further ado, let's get to it. Here is another interview from the Arizona Tennis Classic. Welcome back in, everyone, to the Arizona Tennis Classic. Now joining us here in our broadcasting interviewing booth, whatever you want to call it, is a man who has to be described as a returning champion now on our Cracked Racket shows. And I'm going to say it, I think he's now officially the elder statesman in American men's tennis. It's our dear friend Dennis Kudla joining us once again. Dennis, is that a fair assessment? Can I call you the elder statesman now?
Yeah, I mean, now when I'm practicing with all the Americans, they call me the old guy. Thanks for the hit, old guy. So I think I've earned that right. I think I've been out here for 14 years, so... Yeah, to call me a veteran is, I think, is accurate.
Well, let me just say it's been a 14 years young career, for what it's worth. And certainly I'm curious for you. I know late wild card into this main draw here in Phoenix. What was the appeal for you in taking that main draw spot, coming here competing this week?
Yeah, I mean, I've been coming to Phoenix, I think, since its inaugural year. You know, coming here, I think the first year I was here, I think I won the tournament. I don't know if that was the first or second year. I'm pretty sure it was the first year.
Yeah.
So I've always felt really comfortable. I think the conditions kind of are a nice little mesh, actually, from like what Miami is and what Indian Wells is.
Yeah.
And I've just always seemed to play pretty well. Mm-hmm. So coming here was a no-brainer for me. They do a great job organizing it. I mean, essentially, this is almost a tour event with the Challenger label on it. But, you know, nonetheless, I come here, you know, I get treated like I'm part of the family. Mm-hmm. So, it's easy for me to come back.
Well, you are the elder statesman, so they should be treating you with some respect at this point. Let me just say, you can add an extra zero to the appearance fee number once you've accepted that spot. But, you know, I'm curious. I got the chance to see you play in Cleveland, and I know really dating back to, what, the start of the indoor Challenger swing last September, you've played some really consistent ball. I'm curious how you feel your level is at this point of the year.
Yeah, I feel like I'm playing some good tennis. I think, you know, I found a spark in Columbus last year. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I wasn't even sure I was going to play it. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought about potentially taking the whole fall off and mm-hmm. maybe even consider retiring. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, I feel like I struck a little bit of lightning. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like I necessarily prepared that well for it, but everything just kind of clicked. And then I really kind of dove into being a student of the game a little bit more than I usually have been. Mm-hmm. And kind of just analyzing how the game is being played a little bit more, knowing I don't have a coach right now, so I need to figure these things out. I started looking in a little bit more into stats, and then I feel like I'm finding my rhythm right now, and and I think growing on that and building on that, I've made some of these guys uncomfortable, and that just kind of I built some confidence on that. I feel like I played consistent, put a couple good weeks together, some surprising weeks where I didn't necessarily think I was going to play that well, and you know, I'm hopefully, you know, if I think if I stay at this level and I can make a little bit more of a push, I feel like I'm playing as good as I've ever played, so. Maybe I can put me back in the top 100. I feel like right now with a lot of guys my age that were slightly older than me are kind of gone. And then these younger guys, maybe with just not as much as experience as I have, you know, maybe there's an opportunity for me to come back and get back in there. So I'm definitely driven and motivated, and hopefully I can get that done.
Are you a 92?
Yeah, August 92.
Yeah, my older brother's a December 92. You're not old, is what I'm trying to say. I promise. I refuse to accept that premise.
I am very young in life. In tennis, once you hit the 30 mark, you're allowed to say you're old.
Fair enough. No, the mileage on the knee is up there. There's no doubt about that. I'm curious, though. That's fascinating to hear, you embracing, dare I say, becoming a student of the game. And look, you know, even you're over 30, you mentioned it, but you've been playing this sport now for more than two decades. I'm sure the Gladwell rule, 10,000 hours on the forehand, backhand, you've done all of that. So when you say, I've noticed some things that maybe otherwise I wouldn't have been attuned to, what exactly are those things? What are you picking up now? What are you doing to expand how you study the sport?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one way of a story of when I was 19, losing to guys that were like 33, 34, feeling like I had the legs, I was way stronger than them, there's no way I'm losing to an old guy. And then they'd find ways to beat me, you know, over and over, where I was like, I feel like they just know something that I don't.
Sure.
And I feel like now I kind of understand that, being the older guy, where sometimes I'm playing these younger guys, it's not necessarily they don't know what the game is, but I've just seen so many varieties of scenarios that I can maybe pick up on it a little bit earlier. I can say, I've seen how this one's played out 10 different ways. Well, maybe they've only seen it like three times or four times. So something like that. And then just kind of understanding where my game is now and what I need to do to maximize my physicality, maximize my strengths, with kind of the way the game has changed a little bit to more big boy tennis and just kind of see ball, hit ball. There's still some scrappy guys out there, but it's obviously less and less, where you almost have the two extremes. You have a guy that doesn't hit the ball well but does not miss and is overly creative than we've ever seen, or you have a guy that really isn't thinking much out there and hitting the ball Mach 10, and then you just kind of have to survive out there. So I feel like I'm seeing those styles, and to be able to adjust from day to day depending on what your draw is very difficult, but I feel like that's where the stats and that's where understanding maybe how to practice a little bit differently than what I used to is allowing me to make those adjustments quicker.
This is a very stupid question. I acknowledge it from the start, but again, returning champion, so I feel fine asking it. Is it still fun? Like you talk about this problem solving now, and the idea of being on court and being like, two forehands cross one line, I know that pattern's coming. Like, that sounds pretty fun to me, to be able to anticipate, to, dare I say, move to that higher plane of existence in this sport. Are you feeling that?
It's not always fun.
Okay.
It's fun when, yes, you can anticipate and it's going the way that you think it's going.
Sure.
And you can see the game. When you're confident, it's really fun.
Yeah.
When you're not playing well and you just don't know what's going on, you feel like the game has changed, it's foreign.
Yeah.
That's when it's miserable. You know, so right now, again, even if some days I don't feel like I'm moving as well as I can be, I do find a little bit more joy in the game. For me, the joy begins if I'm pain-free.
Yeah, sure.
If I'm pain-free out there and I feel like I'm hitting the ball all right, it's a fun game.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've always said it's more of like the logistics and the outside outside of the court what makes it not fun. You know, traveling now, sitting a couple hours hurts my back a little bit more than when I was 19, 20. But at the same time, you know, being a student in the game has challenged me and brought a little bit more joy to the game than some previous years where I haven't done so well.
I know. I've been the same height for about 8 years now. It was about 2 weeks ago on a flight that I noticed that my knees always hit the seat in front of me. Like, has it always been this uncomfortable? Because it got a little bit more uncomfortable, I feel like, these last two, three months.
Yeah, I think the plane seats have stayed upright a little bit more than they usually have. So
that's what I'm saying. I don't even think I had the circle on my United flight the other day. I was like, can I back up this seat?
I think the other day I had like barely any recline and I had the no window seat.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is awful.
That's what happens when you fly Spirit, yeah. as you know. But no, I am curious because, again, to hear you talk about all these things, so fascinating. You mentioned it's about 15 years now in your pro career. And, you know, I'm old enough to remember. I think I once asked you if this is true or false. You took a year away from junior tennis to recreate your forehand. Is that that's a true story, sort of, or is that?
I didn't take a year away.
That legend's been construed over time.
Yeah, I mean, if that's a legend, wow.
Yeah, it was for me growing up.
I did.
You were stuck in the U.S. Open final.
I did change my forehand big time.
Yeah.
You know, when I finished juniors and I went to USTA, I only thought there's maybe two or three things I needed to change.
Yeah.
Wow, there was probably about 15 things I needed to change.
Sure.
So my forehand went through quite a learning curve from probably 17 to 19.
Okay.
You know, it's by now everyone knows it's my weaker side,
yeah.
but it's something that sometimes I feel like I can strike gold and sometimes I feel like I don't even know how to make contact. So everyone's usually has a side like that, maybe not to that extreme. You know, I do know over time I feel like I probably should have been a lefty.
Yeah, okay.
I think I am a natural lefty, but that's probably why my backhand's so good.
Yeah,
but you know, the game, again, it's confidence, it's balance, it's how your eyes are. At some points I wasn't a student of the game, but yeah, I mean, that forehand has gone through some waves of
yeah.
Waves in the classroom, let's say.
I think the legend started because it was like, you know, you step away, Jack wins Kalamazoo twice, Bjorn goes to the Junior French Open, does his thing, and it's like, where'd Dennis go? And so the legend was you stepped away to work on the forehand, then all of a sudden we've seen you that Junior U.S. Open Final 2012.
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
that's my golden era. I want you to know, when I think of those years, that's my big three.
Yeah.
You, Jack, and Bjorn. But I'm curious, again, during your pro career, you talk about the forehand, all these different things technique-wise. What's the biggest difference in the way pro tennis is played now to maybe when you were breaking in?
The biggest difference now, I mean, I've been asked the question kind of like, is there something you would have changed when you were younger if you were to start over? And I think nowadays juniors and younger players, all they try to do is try to be physical and play so many balls from the back while they just they dedicate maybe 10% of the practice to the serve first ball and the return. You know, when you're hitting cross courts, that's a ball that is similar to a neutral ball that you wouldn't even see until about the fourth or fifth shot of a point. So you're bypassing the first three or four shots of the point, which I think I also saw some Instagram video or someone was like 68 or 67% of points are won within the first four shots.
Yeah.
So you're like, interesting, based on those stats and based on what I see with that ball is, what are we doing? We're absolutely hyper-focusing on the 20-30% that's left and not focusing on the super majority. So I always thought that, you know, the serve return right now is just absolutely dialed in. Every guy that's playing well, serving on a dime, serving high first serve percentage, taking care of their first ball, it just feels like they're holding so easily and putting so much pressure on the return game. Now everyone's a good returner.
Yeah,
there's not really any bad guys. It's not easy to just like spin it in.
Sure.
And then, I mean, the physicality, I feel like down the line, you know, down the rankings is pretty insane. Like when I first started, like a guy like 300-400 I thought was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Now it's like 900's really good.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah.
The margin's like this. Mm-hmm. I honestly think it's just more of confidence and understanding of the game, the tennis IQ. The top guys understand the chess game while some of the younger guys are just sort of, or not younger guys, lower ranked guys are just kind of playing checkers.
Yeah.
So they're not really in the same ballpark.
You know, it's really well said because there are times, I always say watching men's tennis in particular at this level in person, I'm like, I don't know, he made a few more serves than the other guy, or his forehand went in today, your forehand didn't, whatever it may be. And so, yeah, it's fascinating to hear that. I also feel like I listen to the ball come off an Alcaraz, a Sinner, a Felix's racket. It sounds like a Jets taking off. I'm like, it didn't used to sound like that, I feel like.
No, it's big time. And then also understanding kind of different paces, spins, you know, the natural geometry of the game. So it's some guys are overanalyzing. Some guys are pretty dumb as rocks, but just understand it from an instinctual point of view. So there are different – what's so beautiful about this game is there's so many varieties to win. But so it's hard to pin down what the actual one difference is, but it is, like I the easiest way I would say is the top guys are playing chess. Everyone else is probably playing checkers.
I love to hear that. Well, last two questions for you. I'm curious off the court. Again, you're now over 30. You're married. You've got, am I allowed to say
what you did?
Okay. First kid coming in August. Mazel tov, my friend. That's so cool to hear. How does everything happening off the court impact the on-court life, and how are you feeling about all these things?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when you have a good balance or very calm off the court, it makes on the court a lot easier. You know, when I step off, there's not something I'm stressing about. I feel like things are in order. You know, I'm super excited about the baby, our first one, due in August.
Congratulations.
I feel like it's definitely changed my mindset pretty instantly. Mm-hmm. Where maybe in moments where I feel like I could have tapped out or I could have done anything, it goes straight to my head of just like, I need to try because this is my kid. You know, I as another person that's coming into my life, I understand what comes with having a kid. It's very expensive moving forward. So I need to also, you know, set a good example, and that just doesn't happen overnight. That's kind of a momentum, and you got to build up to that. And also, just in general to myself, I want to be a good example and not just be the person that talks the talk, but, you know, does something else on the court. But yeah, other than that, I'm healthy. Marriage is healthy. Baby's healthy. So it's not too much I can complain about.
No, I love to hear it. And yeah, I mean, again, watching you in the United Cup sideline role these past couple of years, you look like the team captain. Like, it's very clear there's some gravitas that you carry that everyone's willing to listen. Everyone's willing to lend their ear to you as a calming figure. And, you know, again, that does get you thinking about the future, what that may post-tennis career looks like. But we'll worry about that then. I'm curious. I'm not going to murray you and say, you almost done, my friend, I promise. But my question
is... Who knows,
is,
maybe.
Yeah, but you mentioned, again, your level, your confidence. What are your goals here for 2024? What can fans expect from you this season?
Yeah, I mean, goals for me, I felt like I just wanted to keep building on kind of this momentum that I've built since last October. I don't necessarily have a ranking goal. I definitely want to stay in the slam qualies. You know, I feel like I can still make a couple of big pushes. You know, I used to always be trying to win a title, try to get the top 50. Those aren't really my goals. If that happens, great. But other than that, it's kind of just keeping up with things, keeping the balance. And it's a little bit different mindset now where I don't feel like I'm as selfish as... You know, usually you should be.
Sure.
I like to help. I like to talk about the game with maybe some younger guys. I do find I'm not trying to do it, but they've asked my advice and they've actually listened. It looks like they're all ears. And that kind of, you know, allowed me to take a step back. I'm like, wow, like actually maybe I do have some valid information. Maybe test my theories over the years. Like, do I actually know what I'm talking about or I don't? But, you know, based on conversations I've had and results that have happened after for some of these other guys with maybe some tips that maybe I do, but so I am honored that people would listen, whoever does listen. But yeah, that's my goals are simple. Just try to stay healthy, be a student of the game, be a good example, and then you know, just be a good competitor, plain and simple.
I'd love to hear it. About four round of 16s at Wimbledon from now, you, Tredd, and Andreas are going to be a great Virginia coaching staff. Let me just tell you again.
That would be insane.
Still a decade away, but...
I think Ty Kwiatkowski would break my knees before I got that job. He'd make sure I would not be able to take it before him.
Oh, he would submit some sort of file with a background check. Say, 10 years ago, let me tell you, but...
I'm 4 years away from potentially even being considered for that job.
Yeah, exactly.
That degree is very far away. Yeah. It may never happen.
No, so what we'll is it? See. It's the McKinty School of Business or whatever, the McLeish or whatever, whatever degree Ty's got. Yeah, one of those things.
And who knows?
Yeah, as J.J. Wolf said earlier, you couldn't even get into Ohio State, as you heard.
He wouldn't either, except for tennis. So
I agree. No, but sincerely, more than anything on the court, what you have done to us for Crack Rackets here off the court, just letting us credibility and always being patient with us. And sincerely, we appreciate whenever we get the chance to chat with you. And again, I always appreciate the chance to bother you in person.
So appreciate it,
man. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.